Welcome back to the Bitter Earth podcast. We're a queer Legend of Korra super fan podcast. Wow, only six more times I'll likely ever say that. I'm Tim Stanish. We are here today to talk about book four, chapter seven, reunion singular, which, you know, I feel like there were numerous. Anyway, we are joined at we are joined as always by our amazing co-host Derek Darning.
Hello. Yes. Much like Mako, my goal this episode is to contribute absolutely nothing other than to like neg the women around me.
If he was my boy, I'd say they are burying my boy. I just don't care.
Oh, rough look for Mako. We haven't had to say that for a while, so that's exciting.
He hasn't been in the show recently, so
yes.
This was not it was a return to form, but it was not an amazing showing. No. For the most notorious cop on the show, because Lynn hasn't been in an episode since like the premiere. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting off on a negative note. I felt like this episode was like 90% of the way there. Anyway, we are joined today by our amazing frequent guest. We love her, we miss her, the host of I Don't Know About That on Silent Podcast, the host of the Project Runway recap on Silent Podcast, the host of Slosh Survivor on Silent Podcast, the host of Fiji Forever on Silent Podcast, the Abbott Elementary recap, and I'm sure there's even a billion more things I can't even think of right now, because she's always throwing out another podcast over the airwaves. It's Gia Worthy.
Oh my god, thank you guys so much. As I said before we went to air, it feels so good to be back in this Google Meets room, so I'm just honored to be a part of the Legend of Korra recap again, and the fact that you guys gave me one of the most bisexual coded episode of all time, just like in television history. I feel seen.
It's powerful.
Happy yes. to have you here.
Yes. Yeah, we have our double date, maybe a first for the series that we've seen, which is very fierce.
We love it for them.
What are you?
I'm just rifling through my
what counts as a double date?
Rolodex. Yeah. No, because only Sokka and Suki were really together at the end of book three when they were all hanging out.
Right. It's maybe if Mako, Korra, Tenzin, and Pema were in a room together, maybe in book two.
The most toxic room of all time.
The most uncomfortable double date in animated history.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of mentor-mentee double dating in fiction. I think that that's something that could be explored a lot more.
I don't know. I don't know if we need that.
If Buffy and Angel and Giles and Jenny went on a double date, it'd be fun.
Honestly, I don't know if that would be more or less toxic. I feel like there are fewer homewreckers in that situation, at least.
Yeah, but, an age gap extended.
Yeah, so you'd trading off.
I feel like an Iroh Zuko double date at some point could have been very cute.
I agree.
Yeah, but depending who the dates are with.
Yeah.
I feel like we only ever saw Iroh lust after young women, and only once, so
not even flirt, just cartoon wolf eyes at these young women.
Which, yeah, he's had one of those at his funeral. Someone was like, he had a complicated legacy. War crimes, strange
age gap.
Anyway, I keep saying war crimes about things that I think back and I'm like, was it a war crime, or were they just at war? I do think all war is a crime, but there are differences.
Yes, let's get it right. We don't want to be who called Obama a war criminal this week? Lucy Dacus. Yeah, we don't want to invite the hordes.
why would
listen? It doesn't count if you say sorry, like Iroh did.
Yes, exactly. Yes. He did say sorry.
He slayed, and then he was like, "Wait, never mind. That was my bad."
Oh, he definitely was a war criminal, because they were trying to starve them out in Ba Sing Se. So yes.
Yes.
Well, I think that if anybody has a handle on what he needed to do to balance his spirit out to like be make it okay that he did that, it's Iroh.
Yes, that's true. Also, I mean, and like we saw in this episode, people are very forgiving in this show. Like everyone was just kind of like, well, like, I don't know. We can get into the Bolin and the like prisoners.
Oh, that's not even the forgiveness that I thought you were going to talk about.
Oh, there's also, yeah, we can get into the, I feel like, I understand the 10% you're talking about, Sam. I feel like these storylines kind of just tumbled into the ending of the episode.
Yeah, no, like I really felt like there was so much interesting stuff here, and I really feel like book four had the potential to be like so intriguing and like really like the ideas are all there. It is, I just want them to like go deeper in on them. Like, I think that Kuvira is like starting to sort of create the new Fire Nation is like such an interesting and good concept for the like foundation of the season. And then I just don't think that like this episode specifically is so good. I just don't think that they're like doing enough. And I feel like we're all trying to like put Prince Wu back on the throne. Is that really the goal that we're like supposed to be rooting for? Like, I don't think that that's like what they, it does feel like that's what they want us to want, but I don't think they've done anything to make me want that.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I think one of the bigger, I love this season as a whole. I love Legend of Korra as a whole, but this season is like one of the shining stars of it for me. But this did not deserve to be an 11 episode season. We need like a solid 22 episodes to, I feel like, make it as fully fleshed out as I personally would have liked, for like thinking about where we are at this episode, and it's episode 7, and I'm pretty sure like there's only 11 episodes in this season. So what, there's like four,
there's 13 episodes, but I agree with what 13, you're saying. Yeah. Like, this feels like it should have been episode 3 or something. Like, yeah. I really like Korra alone, and I like some of the stuff we like. I enjoyed the slow start to the season, but that, like, but you get to the halfway point and you're like, okay, we had a slow start, and now we're like finally in.
Now there's 6 episodes left,
right? Yes. And it's like, okay, that slow start sort of ate a lot of the screen time.
Yeah. So I just feel like this could have been so, it was already very good season, but it could have been so much better if they just gave us like 10 more episodes, please. Just to like, I love a filler episode too. Like, let's not forget the importance of the filler. I love them.
Yeah, because this episode, it's both of the, I feel like we kind of got like a Village of the Week kind of thing with Bolin and Varric. Like, they were just, it was very Avatar The Last Airbender. Like, once again, they're refugees and they're like helping them escape, or like against this like great empire that's like trying to take over the world. And then at the same time, we got this like real or like ongoing plot line with the rest of the team. And like, I do, like, this is probably my favorite episode so far, I would say. I thought it was well done, but then, yeah, there are just some issues where it's like, I don't know, like maybe Korra and Asami could have had this like secret about the letter for like longer than a single sentence, and like have it be like something they talk about just one-on-one first before Mako hears or like overhears them discussing it, or like there could be so much more drama there, and then he just like instantly forgives and it's like all okay. It's just like it's a really good idea, and then they like don't take it to its like actual conclusion.
Yeah, Asami kind of drops the ball there by just like, because I'm pretty sure Korra explicitly says like, please don't tell Mako and Bolin that I'm not talking to them right now. So she really fumbles that. But to be fair, it's been like 2 years probably since she read that letter from Korra, so it's more understandable, I guess.
Yeah, Asami Miss Letters. She's always talking about all the letters she's receiving from Korra for her dad.
I know. She's so popular.
She's a very popular lady. She's a socialite, you know, and an engineer. She's a very busy woman.
Yeah, she just got empty houses for people to like shack up in too. Which, love that for her.
We love a girl boss.
Yes. That was a really cute, I loved that we got to see. Does she have a name? Grandma Mako is like what I'm going for, just because Wu calls her that.
That was very funny.
Yes. Very cute little, like, let's bring her back into the fold.
I loved it so much. I love the family dynamics now that Mako and Bolin actually get a family. They're just so
Yes.
cute. Yes.
And it's, I mean, it's kind of, it's, I can just already see in the next episode, like, they're gonna be like Prince Wu's servants or whatever, even though he's just like not really on the throne right now. Because, like, I don't know, it's just, it's one of those things that's just been like perfectly set up last season or the season before, and now it's like being brought back
Yeah.
and paying dividends.
Yeah, like who would be the most sympathetic to a dethroned prince? It would be them. It's like very good.
And then so I like this double date scene that we were talking about where like they meet up at the restaurant. Korra and Asami have this moment. Asami's like, "I love your hair." And Korra's like, "Thanks." And
You know,
then
Cora calls her
yes.
snazzy.
The blush. I saw the blush. You can never take that blush away from me.
So
Like
true.
Cora's feeling the vibes right now.
Some I've recently been doing something new with my hair and growing it out, and but I feel like I have such deep-seated anxiety and paranoia that when someone says they like my hair, I'm like, are they just saying that because they noticed my hair is different and they want me to not think that my hair looks bad? So I'm happy that Cora doesn't have that reaction.
Yes, I'm glad for her too. I want that for you too, Sam.
I'll just never believe anybody when they compliment me about anything. You know, working on it. Not really, but I would love to be working on it.
If war criminals can accept compliments, Sam, then you definitely should be able to accept some compliments every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes. Of course, I figured. But I like that Wu, like, one of the first things he says to Korra is, like, hey, will you pop into the Avatar State? I want to see your eyes glow. And Korra's like, what? No. Because it feels very like fan discussion about the Avatar State, where they're
Yeah.
like, if she went into the Avatar State, or even like kind of Opal and people last in the battle of Xiao Fu, where they're like, just go into the Avatar State. When it's like nobody other than the Avatar even knows what that feels like. And it's kind of like it's probably a pretty traumatic thing, especially at the start of an Avatar's life, where like we saw Aang like accidentally go to the Avatar State and like destroy everything like so many times. So it's probably like to finally have control over this massive power is so funny. So like someone who has no idea what that's even like Wu doesn't even know how to bend, to suddenly be like, well, you just like show me what it looks like. I think it sounds
Just hit the kill switch, like
cool.
He's
blow it
like
up.
our window into that world of like the overreaching part of like being in a fandom like that, or like commodifying Korra instead of like actually treating her like she's a person. So I love Wu, problematic king or problematic dethroned king, but I feel like he means well.
Yes, he's like a sweetie pie. I think that's the strength of his character. It's like you definitely aren't rooting for him to be back on the throne, but like I don't think he is either. Like he clearly just enjoys chilling with his live-in boyfriend, Mako.
He wants to be wealthy but not have any power.
Yes. Which
Same.
that sounds pretty good to me.
I think I am Wuko without the live-in bodyguard boyfriend.
And
Never say never.
I know, like I do believe there is a world for like for me. Like there's
Yes.
that is like what I aspire to. Just a lot of money, no responsibilities, hot bodyguard boyfriend living with
Yes.
me.
Sounds
It
ideal.
sounds like a Sandra Bullock movie
Oh my gosh,
waiting to
tell
happen.
me. But I do, yeah, I'm glad that we are acknowledging that they are definitely boyfriends because, like, I got that vibe during the double date.
Okay, like I agree that's like how it is written, but like I want, you know, if we're talking age gaps, like I just remember this being like some level of not right. I haven't, you know, Googled it this time, but
I thought they were only like 2 years apart.
we'll find out.
I can Google.
I could be wrong. If not, then I take it back. But like, double date.
I
Mako's
think so.
22.
Woo, Legend of Korra. He's got to be like 20, right?
That's what I
Woo's
thought.
Wu's true age is unknown. It is said he was studying at university when his great aunt died. Oh, so he was at minimum 18 and then 21 and before. Oh, for some reason, I thought he was 14.
No, 14. Oh, okay, my God.
He acts like a little boy.
He is just figuring out himself. He's going through a rough time.
Yes.
All right. I stand corrected, and I'm thrilled to be corrected, and I'm happy to. Yes,
we are not shipping. We are not shipping 14-year-olds with 22-year-olds, and
of course not
in this house. But like 20 and 22, a-okay with two people that like one of them can't stand the other. You know, it's like a grumpy sunshine situation, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I thought a lot about this.
Hotel only has one bed at Asami's house.
Oopsie. Yeah. I love that Wu's trivia on the wiki is Wu is allergic to bee stings. Okay.
Does that ever come up in the show?
It must.
Yes, it was when he got pied and he said to him, like, I'm allergic to strawberries. And Mako, I think, was like, no, you're allergic to bee stings. I don't know why that warrants like a trivia bullet point, but.
But he remembers that his boyfriend is allergic to bees. Like, the bar is in hell.
On the ground,
But listen, this might be the most romantic thing Mako has done in all four seasons of television. For sure. Is remember. Because tell me he would remember poor Urasami's allergies.
No. He would not.
No. Bitches have to remember to have an EpiPen on them.
Exactly. Yeah, do we think they've invented insulin in this universe? Not insulin, whatever goes in an EpiPen. Adrenaline?
Asami probably has, but she's probably hiked up the price so high that nobody can afford it.
Big Pharma.
Big Pharma, yeah. But it's just Asami.
Yes.
Bees in this universe are probably terrifying also, so.
I mean, yeah, I'm thinking like the buzzard wasps from the desert.
So
everyone is probably allergic to them, and that everyone's like allergic to being like stabbed with a knife.
So Asami has invented something that could help that.
Yeah.
Surgery.
Oh my God.
This is like the first, this is like the second or third of many L's in the episode. Mako, Wu gets up to go to the bathroom, and Mako's like, I'm not going with you. And it's like, you are his bodyguard. Like, you don't want to lose eyes on him. You know, he's like genuinely one of the least dutiful, most awful, horrible characters in the entire planet.
I know. It's like, I was gonna, after the episode, I was like, wow, Mako like contributed nothing to the plot. But I was like, that's not true. He did set the plot in motion by not doing his job. Right.
Like, and then he doesn't even help during the fights. And all he does during the car chase is be like, you're doing it wrong. I mean, while Asami and Korra are like, saving Prince Wu.
He also set up the fight scene by yelling about the fact that they lost the prince. So
they could have just like snuck out of there without having to fight anyone.
Oh, they hyped up the he was there for the drama of it all.
Yes, that's true. He was he just was like, you know, this won't be as fun if we don't have to like ping pong down like a bridge in an air ball. So that's what we're gonna do.
I like that Korra is. I like that the spirit mind, like, clairvoyance thing wasn't, like, a one-off, and she's just, like, able to do that now. And that they're writing it into the show rather than, I don't know, it'd be so, it feels like it's a thing where a writer could be like, well, that was just a one-time thing, so she needs to figure something else out, but it makes sense that she's, like, learned how to do that and is now able to, like, use that to her advantage.
Mm-hmm. She's got a little power-up.
She's got to have something after her 6-7 episodes in a row of failure.
I know.
We need to give her a win.
I know. She got punked pretty hard this episode by like the kidnapping guy. I was like, what happened to your avatar reflexes? Like that guy just kind of like threw, like bumped you up a little and like you're done. I feel bad for her, girl.
I also feel bad, but like season one, Korra would have just beat the shit out of him. And I do miss that part of her. I understand she's like going through trauma and everything, and she's got to process things in a healthy way. But sometimes people just need an ass whooping. Like sometimes I'm tired of people like avatars don't need to be the bigger person all the time. Aang, I'm sorry.
Call him out.
Yes.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. You don't. I don't want, listen, I don't want to be canceled for like being anti-Aang, but I'm just, she just shouldn't have to be the bigger person all the time. Beat his ass.
Yes. No, I think that invites comparison just by creating a second show that there's an Avatar. And I feel like people are always like, well, Korra's stronger, Aang's like blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking about that in today's episode because whenever Korra metal bends, I always think about Korra is the first Avatar who can metal bend. And it's like, okay, it was invented when Aang was alive and now Korra can do it. So it's just funny that like that's become a... like moment or whatever because Aang wasn't able to do it and Korra is, and it's like, who's gonna be the first Avatar to lava bend? Is it the next one?
I don't know,
but Korra is better. Aang can't do it.
Yep, period. I mean, Aang had all those years, like Toph invented it when he was 12, so he had plenty of time to learn it. He's just not as good.
But not everyone who can earthbend can metal bend.
Okay, and he's one of the ones who can't, and Korra's one of the ones who can.
That is what I am saying too.
So I think we agree, like Korra is better.
Yes, like we do. Yeah, like Aang's fine. Like I get it. We've, you know, everyone talks about Aang, but like Korra, come on now.
I do I think that this season is less about this, but I think that generally I like the theme of the universe that the past Avatar's mistakes and shortcomings create problems for the current Avatar. Like we saw that with a lot of the stuff that had happened in book 1 through 3, like Aang was not able to defeat Amon's father or whatever, like fully. And now he's like back and wreaking havoc, and just generally like throughout, like the Red Lotus formed while Aang was a lot, that kind of stuff. And I think that that happened a lot in the Kyoshi novels too. It was a lot about like Kurik's badness, and like then that like Kurik's team Avatar was like her mentors, and they're there with like the experience of all of his issues. And then I feel like, what was I going to say? Oh, well, just like Aang and Korra. I wish Aang was like a larger part of the show. I know that they did the whole like Roku spirit mentor thing with Aang. Like, I don't, but
it would be a different dynamic in this one.
Right. And, but then I guess there's like Tenzin is kind of that, or that's what they're hoping or anyway, but they're such different characters.
Yeah.
And so I guess I just wish Aang was here.
Yeah, I feel like it would be a fun, really fun dynamic because it's like Korra, I think, would like refuse to call on Aang's like expertise. And I could like see a scene like of him, like kind of like her, he's trying to like call her and she's like hitting like ignore a bunch of times on his like spirit message. Like that would be a really fun dynamic for the two of them, but it's like just something that doesn't exist anymore. So, oopsie.
Her connection to the past Avatars is gone.
Yes.
But apparently it can come back. I remember reading the creators were like, well, it's destroyed, but who's to say it could never come back, that kind of thing.
Right.
It's like you are to say that.
You chose that.
Tell me.
Yeah, it's not like something that exists in the world and you're just like transcribing it. It's like, you made that up.
Let us know.
Yeah, you tell us.
I do love the little pieces of this episode where it's like, we know what's been going on with Korra because we are watching the show, but her talking about how she's learned to communicate, like see like other things through the vines, and that her and Asami were the only ones writing letters to each other and stuff. And you forget the fact that like she has not seen these people in 3 years. So it's just like so much happens in 3 years. Can't imagine like just not seeing people that you used to spend like every day with and then have it be 3. Oh, it was wild.
No, I know. Like, I mean, kind of easy checkpoint, but like think of someone you haven't seen since you went into COVID lockdown. It's like I haven't seen people for like in so long, just because, you know, life changes, people change, I keep on changing, but like it just needed, they're like, I know they went through a lot together, but it's like, this episode should have been 2 episodes, or like that plot line needed to be extended, even if they weren't, there needed to be more conflict since Korra like truly split and didn't talk to Mako for 3 years.
I agree. I think there would be a fun version of this where this was like split into two seasons where it's like maybe like the first season, our heroes like are helping Kuvira. They're like, oh, Kuvira's like helping unite the like Earth Kingdom. Like, that's cool. And then we get that sort of twist at the end of that season. Like, oh no, she's like actually fascist and like rounding up people of different racial like backgrounds, which is like they just casually drop that in this episode. Like, oh, she's like also like actively like genociding people. Like, it's like, oh, okay. So I think that would have been a fun way to draw this out more, but
literally sending people to camps. Like the wording they use here, which is just terrifying.
It's really intense.
I do agree. I actually thought that for some reason going into this that Wu being kidnapped was over two episodes. Like, the first episode is when he's kidnapped, and then in the second episode, like the episode afterwards, is when he's rescued. I forgot that it all happens so fast. Yes. Maybe it's because Mako wasn't doing anything, as we have already pointed out several times here. But I forgot. I just, this season is already so good and just would really benefited by expanding, like doing double the episodes, or at least like 10 more episodes, you know? Like,
I agree.
I feel like it is needed here because there's so much stuff to explore.
Derek, I like the idea that you had of Kuvira's like turn. I think that would make really that would be very interesting. We like make her a sympathetic character before she's suddenly this dictator.
That would be really. And then really we sympathize with like Lin's like sort of animosity towards her.
Sure. And I just feel like the Bolin Varric stuff in this episode is like unsympathetic at the beginning because of like the lack of buildup we got. Like, they're like, the only explanation in this episode is like Bolin being like, what's her name? Kuvira tricked both of us. It's like, okay, but you helped her conquer an entire nation and you never heard about any of, like, you knew there were re-education camps. You never like thought about what that might be. Like, it just doesn't actually add up. And so I think that we needed a little more understanding of how she tricked them.
Yeah, I would also have loved for Bolin to like react to the fact that it's like she's getting rid of people like who are like of Fire Nation and Water Tribe descent. Like, that includes him. Like, he is like, his family is like half Fire Nation, and like he doesn't even really react to that information here.
And I mean, Varric is also from the Water Tribe.
Yes. So it's like, I think maybe that's like a result of the show really blurring those lines of like what used to be like, oh, everyone's like color coded like by like what nation they're from. Like,
I know, because just seeing these refugees all dressed in green, I'm like, well, these are all earthbenders, and then the guy firebends, and I was like, what?
Mind-blowing. I know. So it's like, I would have loved them to explore that a little more, which would have, you know, been possible with more episodes, like we've been saying.
I really do like your idea of like expanding this arc into two seasons, because I especially remember just like Kuvira being introduced to us at the very, very end of season three. And I knew when I first watched it, because it was years after the show aired, I knew that Kuvira was a villain, but I had no idea like what the actual arc was or anything. So then just like watching the transition from season three to season four so quickly, I would have loved to expand on this like way more.
Agreed. And I will in my fanfic where I rewrite the entire show.
I love it.
You can, I mean, just skip over book two, Red Lotus just include Red Lotus in with the uncle, because he's in the Red Lotus.
Yeah.
And then the killing of the Earth Queen will be at the end of book two, and then book three. Or, you know, that kind of thing. It's just all sorts of like, and then we can start.
Yeah. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Yes. Send me the fanfic when you're done with it.
Please. I have to hurry and get it.
300,000 word Cora fix it fic.
I have to fix it. What else? To go back a little, Gio, when you were like, oh, like, I forgot they solved this within an episode, because, you know, like, you said something like Mako didn't have anything else going on At first, I thought you meant like, oh, like he solved it so quickly because like he has nothing else going on in his life because he has no friends.
No, I mean, if Mako was more involved, I think it would have extended over to
him. Yes. I thought you were just, for some reason, it made me laugh because I thought you were like being like, oh, Mako, like unemployed behavior over here. Like, wow, you found the prince so quickly because
your friend at 3 p.m. solving crimes and finding the prince.
I mean, it kind of is unemployed behavior because he is purposefully adding drama to his employed friends' lives. Yeah. Like, very unemployed behavior here. Yes.
I mean, I would have loved a twist like Mako set this whole kidnapping up just to spend more time with Korra and Asami. They're like, oh, we have like another like thing that we're trying to get to after this, and he was like, no, yep. But wait, the prince is kidnapped, you can't leave. I would love that for Mako.
I love the Legend of Korra comics that we've gotten so far because I feel like they really expand on just like their personalities and everything and some of their friendship interaction. I just want to see, I need more of the comic. I just need more Korra in my life, really. I'm really sad that this is the last season.
100%. Yes.
Same.
We'll miss her.
I know. I just need a season where she's happy for like more than 50% of the season.
For real. I mean, even in this episode, she like reunites with her besties and they're like instant. Like, I thought that was pretty funny how they like instantly were like yelling at each other.
Yes. And they said this isn't like the old days. And Mako's like, actually, this is very much like the old days.
That's all we ever did was yell at each other.
That was a nice callback. I thought that was earned.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, like, do they like each other? They certainly have been, they certainly spend a lot of time together. I don't know if they were always happy.
I truly believe that, like, no one else would put up with each other's shit like these four put up with each other's shit.
Absolutely. That's very fair.
Even, like, they have an argument out at dinner about whether or not Asami should have continued to converse with her fascist father. Like, this is, like...
Oh, yeah, whole conflict happened so quickly, too. I forgot about
that. So quick. There's so much to go over in, like, this very brief moment. Like, this very brief double date scene. And
I'm very aware of what my father is capable of.
Yes.
Oh, my God. And
they just brush over it all so quickly. Like, Asami reconnecting with her dad just needs to be, like, its own... That could be its own, like... arc, and it kind of is an arc here, but like they just brush over it so quickly here.
Yeah I think that Team Avatar in this era is all about forgetting but not forgiving. They hold on to the resentments, but they, you know, don't bring it up ever again.
Yes. I have to say though, I love them all so much. Like, the fact that they're all disasters just makes me connect so much more than me connecting with the OG Team Avatar.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I think there was an episode of Community where it was like the group finds out that like the reason like there's like no one else actually like wants to hang out with them because they like suck. It's very that vibe where it's like, well, fine, I'll go find new friends. But then everyone actually is like, you are really obnoxious. And then that's why they like, oh, only these people can accept me because they're also really annoying.
Yes.
Team Avatar are the only people who even remember Korra exists. Everyone in this season has been like, do we even have an Avatar anymore? And Bolin and Mako and Asami are kind of like, if I'm not friends with the Avatar, I have nothing. And so they come back.
I know. They're like holding on to this like proximity to a position that like carries very little like social weight anymore.
Oh my God.
We as a society have evolved past the need for Avatar.
Yeah.
They're all little Nepo babies just trying to find their way in the world.
I know, it's very sad.
I love how messy these four are. We haven't even gotten to Bolin and Varric just being absolute messes together. I love them both so much. This,
yes.
So good.
I love so good. When they're like piggybacking each other, that was really fun. I liked that.
And I feel like Varric, it's been like two or three episodes since Julie turned on him. And I like all the little lines we get of him pining for her.
Yes. Oh my God. It's so cute. I feel like I should not be like this excited about like such devastating, like relationships in war, but it's so cute here. Just like, oh my God, dude, just like get it together. Say you're sorry.
I know. Julie deserves so much. Just, I love like the, I don't even know how to describe it, but just like all the little like tidbits of like Julie we yes. get are so funny. Like, oh, she's... yeah, she.
Oh, sorry. You continue first.
Well, just like the whole like she can chew through rope. Like, that's like really funny.
She ran like... 20 miles on a sprained ankle.
If she was like, she's like, how should I word this? She's Chuck like Norris. Evil genius Barbie. That yes. like, if they came out with like some type of like batshit crazy, super smart, iconic like unhinged Barbie, that's that's Julie.
Yes, she's like. Yes. I mean, to draw, I mean, we've been comparing Varric to Oppenheimer.
Yeah,
this is like yeah. she, it's like Oppenheimer bestie Barbie is like kind of the vibe. Yes. Of Julie.
She is the Oppenheimer to Varric's Barbie.
Yes, yes. That, yes. That's, I'm surprised, has anyone done that? Like one ticket to Oppenheimer, one ticket to Barbie. That's, yeah. we need to get on that if we oh, haven't wait, already.
Hold on. No, I'll work on it. Hold yes, on. Yes, I have I did one already for the Survivor. What's it called? The Survivor 40 seasons about which ones are Oppenheimer yes. and which ones are Barbie. So I feel like I could definitely just get that fixed up real quick.
Yes, love that.
Yes. I am nothing if not committed to my craft.
And I think last week I was saying that like I didn't really grasp Varric's turn after seeing the horrors that his weapon wrought. I mean, perhaps he didn't fully understand the project he was working on, or like wasn't able to like really know what his bomb would do until he saw what happened when it exploded. And I would say that after seeing Oppenheimer, I am more sympathetic to Varric's character in book four of Legend of Korra.
You can access that more,
which is a wild thing to say, but I do think that they, you know, it's strange to say, but I think that Oppenheimer did a better job of capturing that kind of character arc than they did with Varric in book four of Legend of Korra. And now having seen it, I'm like, okay, maybe that is realistic.
I can see that. Yeah. Man, I can't wait to watch that on streaming one day in the future and then really be able to understand Varric.
I can't wait to read the Wikipedia synopsis of what yes. happens in Oppenheimer so that I can engage in Oppenheimer discourse.
Yes. More like Floppenheimer. Yes.
And Barbie yes. is kind of Korra's arc, you know. Yeah.
That's exciting. I can't wait to know, yes, to figure that out. Tuesday, yes, is when I'm seeing Barbie, so.
Oh, I'm seeing it on Thursday, and I'm very excited. Can we just have another podcast where we talk about
Barbie?
Barbie? the Barbie film?
The film. I'm done. Film.
Yes.
Let's see. What else has happened? What else happened in this episode? We had freeing people. I will say the hair of the refugee, like the escapees, was a little botched. Is that weird to say?
The hair?
They had weird hair. I oh. think their hair was a little like.
Are you talking about the hair of the refugees?
I know, which is really, really awful. I know they haven't had time to style and everything. But I was like, this feels like a parody of what like a Water Tribe hairstyle would look like. You know? It was like, whoa, there's like a lot going on here.
I don't believe the refugee story enough.
No, I believe yes. it. I'm just like...
But it, I get what you're saying, though. It's just
they could have drawn it better. Yes. That's not their fault that they were drawn like that.
If we are talking about aesthetic critiques of the characters, I do not think Boomy looks good in the air suit. I don't think that yeah. he should be wearing it. I don't, like, it doesn't his fit head, right like, or something.
Onto.
It was very strange, you know, to see. Even though it's like they could have drawn it to look good, they chose not to.
The one, first of all, they just like made him skinny for no reason. They're just like, oh, I have, he was like a war general or something, war criminal. He's also a general. Like, yeah, he's a general.
You can't get to general without doing a couple crimes.
Yes. So he was like in war before, I'm sure. Like they made him skinny and just completely took away like any figure that he ever had with like, I feel like he had like big shoulders at one point. Like, why is he just like a big head and skinny now? Like, they could have done something else. I'm sorry.
Yes. Why did he become a twink? Like, we deserve our like skin tight,
puggy like stomach.
Yes. Bear, daddy bear, like that's yes. what we were promised, and we bring were not back, given.
Bring back Zaddy Boomy. I'm sorry, yes. this version is not doing it for me.
The Troye Sivan music videoification of Boomy.
Just give him like a cloak, like Tenzin has. Like Tenzin's wearing the air yeah. suit, but he's like sort of, you know, layering, and I think that Boomy could benefit from some layering.
Yeah, Tenzin's dressing his age, and Boomy is not. Which is
yeah, he's wearing the same thing as all the youngins, you know, yeah. like not all airbenders are created equal, and therefore mm-hmm. they should not be all wearing the same thing. Like that just seems very short-sighted on their part.
Yes, we give the like flying squirrel suits to like the youngsters, and then yeah, we give something more flowy, something with more like give to it for our more seasoned airbenders.
Yes, I agree 100%.
Yes, for whenever they do the Met Gala in Republic City, we will be there front and center to tweet about it.
I can't wait.
So the refugees are setting these traps yes. while trying to escape the nation. So they find the soldier. They find Bullen and Varric.
Was their plan to like, I think just like use them as leverage or like use them to like get out? Yes, because they're like through the checkpoint. Mm-hmm. So I think their plan was like, we're going to capture people and then threaten them into getting us through the border. So like that checks out to me.
Yes, that checkpoints for me.
Yes. but I did love the part where they like just like very cartoonishly like see the wanted signs for Boleyn. Like they didn't even like try to fashion any sort of like wig or like shave the
sapphire fire.
Yeah, there was no, which that would have been really cute to bring that back.
I really feel like they need to do a better job of making Boleyn a good guy. by the end of the episode, I agree, like he's made the correct moral choice, but like in this scene where they like cut them down from the ropes and they're like we need to use you to like get through the checkpoint, Boleyn like instantly lava bends at them and is like, absolutely not, like it's like you need to go too, like you're supposed to be a good guy, maybe don't threaten people with the volcano.
Yeah, you've just learned that these people have been like literally like racially right. profiled and like tried like to be like physically removed
they use
from
the word,
their home.
Like expunged or like yes. purified, like literally.
Yeah, and like your reaction to that, like you said, is just like fling like burning hot lava in their faces and be like, well, we have to trust each other. Like, why are you not like begging for forgiveness for even being like close to that situation? Like, these two himbos, sometimes I can't.
I know they need a brain cell between them, and I think Julie took it before, like yes. before they were able to make their escape.
Yes, they don't even have one to like pass around. There's just like nothing going on up there.
Yeah, she like said, "I will be having custody of these brain cells for the time being until we know you can be responsible with them." And I think breaking out of into a Kuvira camp is not what she had in mind.
Yes. See, that also would have been a great little arc of like them like, oh shit, learning about this, and then like they are like have like a task force to like, let's like destroy these camps like and help people. Like this really would have benefited from more episodes.
Yeah. Again, absolutely.
Because I don't think we're really gonna, you know, delve too deeply with these refugees they're now on the boat with. Like it doesn't feel like any of them are going to become even secondary characters, but mm-hmm. I feel like that storyline is hopefully not over, but it feels like it kind of might be. We'll find out.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I genuinely cannot remember what happens either way with them.
No, that's the best thing about me watching the season. I genuinely do not remember what happens, and yes. so I kind of am able to make predictions, and I'm like, we'll see.
But I do remember Mako and Boo hanging out with Mako's family. Like, yes. that I remember. I do not remember what happens with this other storyline.
I think I just remembered, based on the episode title that we discussed before the pod, so that's exciting. I remember.
You are the keeper of memories.
Yes. Anything else with this episode?
Beric being offered a spot on the boat and saying, yes, sorry, I'm allergic to drowning, did actually make me laugh out loud. Very funny joke.
It was so iconic.
Damn.
I loved it so much. And he says it to their face. It's just like, I know. This man does not care.
And then gets on the boat.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, the refugee boat is just
not up to snuff.
Running. I can break out of a prison camp, you know, and do, you know, like be betrayed by the love of my life and whatever. But I refuse to get on a boat. Yes. Run by refugees.
And, or it just like doesn't look like his like massive fucking yacht that he had, like, and he's upset.
He would have never gone on the Titanic submarine.
He would have invented it. He would have been piloting it, but
and sent other people.
Yeah. But he would have said, yeah, he's like, no, I'm addicted to not drowning.
Yeah, are you kidding me? That would actually be really funny. I know.
If Cora was like a modern day parody show, like it came out weekly and was kind of like, what would this look like in the Avatar universe?
Yes. And the orca. Will there be like orca seals taking down Varric's yacht or something?
I would love to see that.
Yeah. I do love that they always have this detail of like, there are even like everything, even like vegetables are like hybrids. I think they talk about like cucumber aloe in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Which sounds really refreshing.
I know. I was like, you do need to stay hydrated, and that will help.
That sounds like a flavor of like seltzer, like a spritzer or something that I'd be like, oh, I just need something really refreshing right now.
A cucumber aloe LaCroix would be delicious.
Yes.
It.
Oh my God.
I would down that.
Yes.
Also a part of this last scene with the boat, Bolin apologizes for like on Kubera's behalf for whatever.
Yeah.
It's just very like, on behalf of my gender, I'm so sorry. Kind of thing. It's like, they're still refugees and you're still oppressing them.
Yeah, maybe just like personally apologize as like just you. Just be like, you should be sorry that you, like, for, like you said, Sam, for sure had some idea this was happening and just like did not care or thought you were doing the right thing still. Like, apologize for that, Bolin.
Yeah, like, it feels very much like, like, I'm not the problem.
Yes.
But this is my way of not taking accountability for my actions, but saying it in such a way that you can, like, feel like I'm sort of kind of redeemed now.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, like, I'm sure from their perspective of the, like, it's like the refugees, they're like, this guy was a fucking fascist, so it's like, we'll take what we can get and, like, whatever. Like, they're, like, not expecting him to be good at apologizing.
He's like, now that I've saved 6 refugees, I'm good.
It's kind of like
that's kind of like Iroh math. He's like,
I was gonna say Brooke Dubeck math. Yeah. Am I good?
Mako is kind of Carrie Dubeck.
Yeah. Literally they're both it's all coming together now.
Asami's kind of
their, who's who?
Wu
is Chase. I was gonna say Asami's like kind of their Pat, like she. Well, Avatar or not Avatar. Korra is like their Pat, I guess, because she's the most famous. I don't know.
I think Asami's now more famous.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like maybe she's the Pat, and where does Korra fit into all of this? Is she Julie? Streeter?
Truly a Streeter combo.
This is our next bonus episode is who do the Korra characters match up to in the other two? The other Wu.
Give me time to start watching the other two.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, she is so Carrie Dubeck.
I have not seen it, but it is on my list. It's not like I'm intentionally avoiding it. Yes, I've heard it's
like Oppenheimer.
An Oppenheimer I will just never see.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. You don't need to.
Yes. Which from team? Okay, so I feel like everyone in Team Avatar except Bolin would be Oppenheimer. Girly. Yeah. And Bolin would see the Barbie movie.
Yeah. We're just doing the four. I think so. Yeah. That makes sense to me. Because Mako would do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel, and if we're expanding on it, then I would say like Opal and Wu would join Bolin for the Barbie movie.
Yes, for sure. All the Airbender babies would go to Barbie for sure.
What's the oldest one's name again?
I forget. Janora.
Janora, yes. I feel like Janora would go see Oppenheimer.
I feel like Milo would go.
I don't think Milo would be allowed to go to Oppenheimer. I feel like too many ideas.
But I do think that Barbie.
Yeah.
I think that proof that Avatar The Last Airbender is better is that everybody on Team Avatar except for Sokka would have gone to Barbie.
Yeah.
No, I would argue that Toph would go to Oppenheimer.
I would remind you that when she went to the spa with Katara and she had an amazing time, and yes, I feel like that speaks to the Barbie in her.
Yes, but I feel like if they were like, we are seeing the movie about the atomic bomb or Barbie, she would have to be tricked into going to see Barbie. But like, if she was given free will on her choice, she would pick Oppenheimer.
I think that if it was framed as we're going to see a movie about the horrors you feel when you cause destruction, like Toph would be like, that doesn't make any sense. And she'd go to Barbie.
Yeah, she could be dissuaded for sure. I'd be like, Sokka to me gives like Reddit bro Barbenheimer like down. Yes. Like he's the one like really pushing that like sort of narrative.
Yes, and I feel like Zuko would buy a ticket to Oppenheimer, but sneak in to see Barbie instead. Yes.
He can't be seen going to Barbie, but he really wants to see it.
Mm. Yeah, but he's going to go to see Barbie, but he will buy the Oppenheimer ticket.
Absolutely.
And Azula is just going to go like see Oppenheimer like on repeat.
Sure. And hate it because it should be about like the joys of like causing destruction, not the like remorse, you know?
Right. Yes.
She wants to see a propaganda film.
She's like, what? This is bullshit.
Yes.
But speaking of Toph, final scene in this episode, Kuvira and her husband, who I knew his name last week and do not
Junior.
Remember him. Junior, sure. Are harvesting spirit vines in the swamp. Toph nowhere to be seen, but there were a lot of blimps, so there's probably a lot of people, maybe a few too many for Toph to handle at once. But that, you know, that just doesn't add up with the Toph I know, but you know, that's the only thing that could make sense.
Yeah. I do love these little, like, these last few episodes have been like, we get these like little sneaks into like what Kuvira is doing. I like that. It's very like video gamey to me.
Mm. Oh, it's so frustrating because I'm just like, I just want someone to beat her ass. And it's just like, just like, why do you keep doing things, girl? Do you not break? I know.
Well, Toph is right there, so it's like maybe she will get her ass kicked.
I would love that. I would love Toph to kick Kuvira's ass. Mm-hmm. Really, I think Sue should get first pick in the ass kicking, but like I will settle for Toph as her champion.
We need like a tag team situation to go down.
Yeah. You know? Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Where is Lynn? Is my final mystery of the season. I'm like,
she was in Republic City, I guess, like overseeing something. Weren't they like, she was there for the coronation. I think that's the last time we saw her, right?
Yeah, I don't think we've heard anything from her recently.
Because she seemed to have like infinite PTO last season where she just could like gallivant around with her sister. And now I guess maybe they like crack down on that. They're like, okay, Lynn's like gaming the system, even though she's like their boss. Like, I don't know.
She just wanted to be a part of the family drama. I was like, no. We are not exploring traumatic sibling relationships without me getting the spotlight.
Exactly. We love that. I know. Hopefully we get to see her before, because I don't know. Like, so far,
I miss her. Feeling,
yeah, it's not really feeling like a final season quite yet. So, like, we need to get our girlies back together.
The first two seasons, felt like the writers were flexing, trying to be like, look at how many secondary characters we can base episodes around. But now we haven't seen anyone in like four episodes. And it's like, where did that go?
Where did that energy dissipate too. We'll see.
I do miss them.
This was a really fun episode. I liked this one.
I agree. Like I said at the beginning, I 90% of the way there. There are some critiques I had, but I had a lot of fun, and I felt like it was the best one of the season so far.
Definitely. Yeah, it just feels like we're really getting going here, which is what we want.
This was such a good episode. I'm so glad I got to be a part of this.
Yes. Yeah. Any other thoughts, feelings on Reunion? Nothing.
I loved it. Loved.
Yes.
Loved it. I did, you know, play games on my phone during the fight scenes, and there were maybe a little too many. They went a little too long for my liking for like a 20-minute episode, but I still enjoyed my time with this episode overall.
I made the mistake of seeing the scene from Avatar where Team Avatar is like storming the Earth Kingdom capital, like the palace. Like, there is simply nothing like that at all in Legend of Korra across the entire show. There's just nothing fun about the bending in this show for some reason, and it really, really makes me upset.
Yeah, but the bending is quick and dirty in Korra. Yeah.
Fight scenes are like the challenges in Survivor. Yes. Like, that is the time where I don't care how good it is or how entertaining it is. That is snacks and phone time.
I'm making this up, but I feel like in Avatar The Last Airbender, every single fight, there is something new, something inventive, something cool going on. And then it feels like in Legend of Korra, it's all just like earth wall, lower rock, water whip, like, and it's just like, why are we even doing this? Let's move on.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes we get that with like metal bending. You see something cool and new, but it's like very quick. Which I don't know, maybe that was just like a decision on their part. They didn't want them to feel like entire set pieces, but it just doesn't feel as good. Like, I always think about like Aang making Captain Zhao like burn down all his ships. Like, that was like a fight scene that progressed the plot and told us something about the characters. I feel like in Korra it's very much more like punchy time, like, and that's just all that's happening.
Sad to say. But you know, they can't go back and fix it now. Wish they could, but they can't.
That's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, in your fix it pick. Thank you for taking that on.
Yes, you're welcome. yeah, but this was a really fun episode. I'm excited to see the rest of the season now.
Me too. I really only remember the final shot and one thing that happens in the final fight. So I'm ready for the next six episodes. Gia, what were you saying?
Well, I was just going to say, I need to cut together like last episode when you're like, I don't know if I can even finish this season two. This was great. Can't wait to keep watching.
that is the heaven and hell of being a Legend of Korra fan.
Yes.
You never Rose know if thorn. You're going to get a good one or a bad one.
Yeah.
Thankfully this one was a good one. Gia, thank you for being here. Do you have anything you want to plug? I know I said like four podcasts you host, but you can list them again and list anything else you do.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for all of my reality TV shenanigans at Classically Gia. Even though this isn't a Survivor podcast, I would say definitely follow the Survivor Diversity campaign at Serve Diversity. That's at SURV Diversity. Over on Silent Podcast, like you say, I have do a lot of podcasts, but currently I am doing Sister Act with my sister Ariana. That is where we are doing episode by episode recaps of season two of Claim to Fame, which has been so good so far.
Have to watch both season one and season two of that show.
I feel like season one is a great lighthearted watch overall. Like, it's just like it's a show that knows what it is. And it's very enjoyable. And then this season, they're making things a lot more difficult in terms of like figuring out like clues and things like that. And it's been more game heavy, but I love it. And this cast is very well. One alliance in this cast is very, very funny. The other side, I'm just like praying for their downfall. Not just because they are just not as entertaining.
My boyfriend has been watching Big Brother 6, and so I know that feeling.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah.
Go friendship. No. Just kidding.
No, it's not the friendship. You could just tell that that was the lamer alliance, that the fact that that was the alliance name they came up with was the friendship. It just sounds like really good friends. Because we're besties, guys. Ugh, anyway, but yes. Okay. And then also, we finally were able to air our first episode of Slosh Survivor, which is where we talk about some iconic moments in Survivor history over drinks. It was a very fun episode, and I have some ideas for where I'm going to go with the next one, but to be determined. But definitely give this first one a listen and let us know what you think. I'm really proud of being able to put this idea out there. So give it a listen.
What was the moment in this episode?
Oh, so I'm doing it on themes, like how they do drunk history themes, mm-hmm. of like the theme is like outlaws or something. They do three smaller stories. But then, so I did the theme. This episode was Blindside. So we talked about the fall of the Road to Four, the fall of the Four Horsemen, and the Brochacho Blindside. So that's Survivor Marquesas, mm-hmm. Survivor Fiji, and Survivor David versus Goliath.
Yes, I love that.
Yes. So, yeah, so I have a couple ideas for what we're going to do with the second one, but I have to actually figure out how I'm going to structure it.
I will break my sobriety for Slosh. No! Don't worry. I'm ready.
I actually have thought about how I want to do it for like sober guests. And what I think I want to do is like almost like an improv thing. Like we give you a list of possible stories that you will be, but then we won't tell you until like the actual podcast starts, which one you'll actually be doing.
So we'll do like smoke, baby.
So we could do some like sober versions of it.
But like you simulate the drunkenness. That sounds like a perfect solution. My idea was like, oh, just like turn it into a mukbang so like their mouth is full while they try to explain. Your idea is way better.
Yeah. I thought about it, about how I want to do it. Because I do want to have, you know, like people, a lot of funny people that I know are sober and I don't.
We're getting a survivor.
Survivor. Oh, God. I don't know. I was truly unhinged in the Slosh Survivor podcast of like our first episode. I don't even want to know what I would be like after some THC usage. I don't think I'd even be, I would not even save the podcast after its recording. It would just be going on for 10 hours afterwards.
Yeah, which I would love to hear.
Which would be it's be like an experimental podcast beat. That would be one we go live for, just to see how long I can go until I remember like
what are we turning off.
But so it's been really fun, and I have some ideas for some of the future episodes, so I can't wait to have that happen. Yay. And to hopefully have you two as guests at some point.
Yes,
absolutely. Yes, Derek, what do you want to plug?
You can follow me at ReinDerex on Twitter. Follow me and Christine, our good friend Christine, at Shadow Play Gays. Utena musical episode is in the works, so that'll be happening this summer, hopefully before the end of the July. I think we're waiting on a special guest confirmation, so we'll see about that. But yeah, follow us there, and follow at Bitter Jurors Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Play. Follow me at Sim Sanish. Follow me at Buffy Boyfriends. We will be recording the season 2 finale of Buffy the Vampire Slayer this week. So that'll be a good, fun time. And oh my gosh, I did another episode of the Lonely Boys podcast this week. Highly recommend listening to it. Truly, Gossip Girl is so indescribable. I think they're in season 4 or 5 at this point. Four. And like it has gotten so complicated and bizarre and amazing, honestly. just the things they decided to write. What a show that is. So highly recommend Matt Gagan and Brendan Ruppel's podcast, The Lonely Boys. Very fun and funny.
Yes. We love. Thank you again, Gia, so much for joining us. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of Cora.
We'll see if it's good or bad. Bye. Mm-hmm.